Hare Krishna. Today we are going to go over the summary of chapter 2 of first canto. So we'll start with the prayers. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaivam narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat Nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naistiki. I'll just read the translation. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances onto the personality of Godhead, Narayana, onto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, onto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and onto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we saw in chapter 1, the sages of Naimisharanya are asking 6 questions to Sudha Goswami. So that's where the chapter ended. And then in chapter 2, the Sudha Goswami begins to answer those questions. And he covers the first 4 questions of the 6 questions. So the way I have done the PPT is I have grouped together the verses which fall under the same theme. And I've taken those themes from Unveiling His Lotus Feet by His Grace Gurujan Prabhu. And then we'll discuss each verse briefly, the main points of each verse. So the first 5 verses is where Sudha Goswami begins to speak. And he begins to speak by paying obeisances. Paying obeisances to his spiritual master first and then to disciplic succession. So the first verse, actually Sudha Goswami just mentions that Sudha Goswami just begins to speak. And verse 2 and 3 is where we see Sudha Goswami is actually speaking and his first paying obeisances to his spiritual master Srila Sukhdev Goswami. And then his glorifying, the glorification goes on in verse 3 also. So I've combined that first two, second and third verse. So Sudha Goswami is actually saying that, glorifying his spiritual master Sukhdev Goswami, that you are the master of all the sages, not only my spiritual master, but you are master of all sages. And you are so compassionate, actually, that he didn't have to actually, Sukhdev Goswami didn't have to actually speak Srimad Bhagavatam. But he narrated the Srimad Bhagavatam just for the benefit of people of Kali Yuga. So he's, because out of his compassion he did that. And also main point, another point is that as soon as Sukhdev Goswami was born, he actually was self-realized. So he didn't have to go through the reformatory process of purification. He was already there. So verse 4, then we see that Sudha Goswami then takes the blessings or seeks out the blessings of the disciplic succession. So we saw in the verse that we just recited, he offers his obeisances onto Lord Narayana and then to the presiding deities, Naranarayan Rishi of Srimad Bhagavatam. They are the presiding deities of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then to Mother Saraswati, who is the goddess of learning. And last to Srila Vyasadeva, who is the author of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then in the 5th verse, he is actually giving his respects, offering his respects to the assembled sages of Naimisharanya because he's glorifying their questions, appreciating what they have asked. And he's saying that those questions are relevant. Why? Because they relate to Krishna and this gives him an opportunity to speak about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. So we'll move on to the next verse, which is very important. Next few verses are very important verses. And this is where verse 6 and 7 is where Sudha Goswami first answers the first 2 questions of the sages. He answers the first question in verse 6. So he, if you remember, what's the first question? What is good for people in general? So this, what is the ultimate good for people in general? That's the first question the sages have asked. So the answer is given in the translation itself. I'll read the translation. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which man can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. And this is the definition of parodharma, the highest religion. Highest religion for the soul is to render service to the Lord. And that is the only thing that will satisfy the soul. And that's the highest thing for, that's the ultimate good for people. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada goes on to define what is dharma. He says dharma is one something that sustains one's existence. Just like water, the quality, the water is something that the quality cannot be separated from that substance. So like for water it's liquidity, for fire it's heat and light. So for the living entity, what cannot be separated is that they are eternal servant of the Lord, and that cannot be separated from the living entity. And that's what the constitutional position of the living entity is, to serve the Lord. So then Prabhupada also differentiates between Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg. He says that Pravritti Marg is the path of sense enjoyment, and Nivritti Marg is path of renunciation or path of sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord. So we see here that in one way the definition of devotional service is given, and there are two qualities which are very important for pure devotional service. It's ahituki and apratihata. So ahituki is unmotivated, causeless, without any tinge for personal motive, and apratihata is uninterrupted. It's continuous. So we'll move on to the next verse. Verse 7. Where the second question is answered. Do we remember what's the question? Again? What is the essence of scriptures? So because the sages were also so compassionate, we saw that they knew that people of Kali Yuga didn't have the ability or the capability to read and understand all the scriptures. And they don't have time, they are lazy, and so many misgivings are there, so disqualifications. So they asked this question, that what is the essence of all scriptures? Please tell us the gist of it. So that is answered in verse 7. And the answer given is, to render devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. And we see in the verse, it's mentioned that knowledge and detachment are automatic byproduct. And Prabhupada makes it clear in the purport that it's not that knowledge and detachment are like prerequisite. They come automatic as a byproduct. So bhakti is actually independent. It's ahituki, it's causeless. Only bhakti gives bhakti. That's the only cause. So we'll move on to verse 8. So 8 through 15, the theme is, only bhakti is to be gained through the performance of one's work. So the question one can ask is, what if I do activities that do not bring about love of God, if that's not the final end result? So this verse answers that. This verse actually answers, what is not religion? It says such activities are simply waste of time, shrama evahi kevalam. And Prabhupada says that they are simply useless. So the verse actually says that any activity which does not lead one to the final goal, which is attraction for the love of God or attraction for Krishna, is not a religion. That's simply useless and waste of time. Verse 9. Now we have to work. So verse 9 says, what's the main purpose when we work of our occupational duties? The main purpose of occupational duty is to gain ultimate liberation from material life and not material gain. And this is mentioned that religion is to carry us out of this world and not to facilitate our enjoyment. Because we see most of the people in this world, they use occupational duty or they engage in occupational duty just for sense, for gaining something material, to have some material gain. And also they use religion in that way. So there is a cycle Prabhupada explains in the purport that people actually, what they do is they engage in occupational duty and even the so-called religion, and what they are expecting out of is material gain, and from material gain they are able to fulfill their desires and ultimately satisfy their senses. So this is the cycle that keeps one in the pool of the living entity in the pool of material existence. So Prabhupada is saying this is not what is religion, or the verse itself is saying this is not what one should be gaining out of religion. That's not the aim. So then this question again, it can come up that how should then I utilize the material gain that I receive? And since I am in the material world, I would have desires. So what should be my desires, and what should be, how should I utilize the material gain? So verse 10 answers that. It says that one should utilize material gain to seek out the absolute truth. And what should be one's desire? One's desire should only be to have enough wealth to maintain one's body and life, body and soul, maintain one's life, and not anything else. So now we saw that in verse 10 it says that we need to seek out the absolute truth. So verse 11 defines what absolute truth is. It's defined in the translation itself. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagwan. So we saw also in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, absolute truth is defined. What is absolute truth? It says that absolute truth is from which everything emanates. It's the source of everything. And there are three features. This verse, this definition also says that there are three features to absolute truth: Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagwan. And there are three levels of understanding the absolute truth, which is one who can realize Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagwan. But there is a difference in understanding Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan. Brahman and Paramatma are partial realization, versus Bhagwan realization is complete understanding of the absolute truth. And when one understands Bhagwan, one has Bhagwan realization, Paramatma and Brahman realization are inclusive. So then how can we realize this absolute truth in full? Verse 12 answers that. It says only by devotional service one can understand the absolute truth. And there are, in the translation itself we see that there are who will be inclined for devotional service is people who are eager, who are serious, who are seriously inquisitive and eager to hear, are the people who will would want to realize the absolute truth. And also it's mentioned that knowledge and detachment help in devotional service. But it's not, like we saw before, it's not that knowledge and detachment is necessary for devotional service. It's, devotional service is independent of knowledge and detachment, but they do help one to perform devotional service. So then we also know that there is a varnashram system, the divisions of society, four divisions of society. So what then one may ask, what is the goal of that society? What is the final goal of that division? That is answered in verse 13. What is the goal of varnashram system? Prabhupada says, and each and every one divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. So the four divisions are meant to help each other to satisfy the Lord. So Prabhupada also makes it clear that this institution is not meant for artificial domination of one division over the another. So that's not the purpose. The purpose is one can gradually progress by being in varnashram system to attain the final goal, which is love for God. So then verse 14 describes how, what are the specific activities required to attain, to realize the absolute truth in full, to attain perfection. It says, by constant hearing, glorifying, remembering and worshipping the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna, with one pointed attention or focus, one can attain to this goal. So what is the result of remembering? Specifically, here it says, what is the result of remembering the Supreme Lord or the glories of the Krishna? So verse highlights that when one remembers the Supreme, the glories of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, there is, that is the way to cut the knot of karmic reactions. And it explains how it happens. So we see the pastimes of the Lord are non-different from the Lord, because Lord is absolute, so his past name, form, quality, pastimes are non-nama rupa guna lila, are non-different from him. So when one engages in remembering constantly the pastimes of the Lord, what happens is one gradually, the conditioned soul gradually gets spiritualized and ultimately severs the knot of material bondage. So just by hearing or remembering, you know, one can get purified. So we come to the next set of theme, next set of verses. Verses 16 through 21 describe the progressive stage in Bhakti Yoga. So now we have heard that it's important to remember the Lord, it's important to glorify the Lord. So how do we remember and glorify the Lord? First we have to hear about the Lord. Then from that we can remember the Lord, remember his pastimes, and then we can thus glorify him. So how do we get the taste for hearing? So the translation itself answers, I've quoted the translation here. O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. And Bhurijan Prabhu mentions Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's 14 stages in spiritual development. And Vraj Bhakti Mataji also went through the 14 stages. So I have highlighted, I've given them here for verses 16 through 21. So the first five stages are covered in this verse. Is the first stage is Satam Kripa, or the mercy of the devotees. So in our spiritual life, we see that we first receive the mercy of the devotees, and that's how our spiritual life starts. So what is the mercy of the devotee actually? It's that they give us an opportunity to engage in devotional service. So that's their mercy. So in the second step is we engage in the service of the Lord and the devotees. That's Mahat Seva. Then the third stage, by serving the devotees and the Lord, one develops faith, Shraddha. And what happens when one develops little faith? One wants to take shelter of the spiritual master. So it's Guru Pad Ashraya. And furthermore, under the direction of the spiritual master, one engages in service, and then one develops still further eagerness to hear and worship and serve. So that is Bhajaneshu Spirita. So now what are the other steps, next steps? In verse 17, we see that Krishna helps one who has developed this taste for hearing. And the stage 5 is also mentioned, it's part of it in 17, verse 17. And it says that Krishna begins the process of cleansing the heart, all the anarthas from the material desires from the heart. Then, furthermore, as one is engaged in hearing and serving the pure devotees, what happens next? The anarthas, the verse says, the anarthas are almost removed. Not quite, I mean not fully, but almost removed. All the abhadras. And firm faith, more faith develops. So the faith is actually progressive. It's not a one point in like a stage that it develops. It's a progressive stage of for faith to develop. It keeps on developing. And then the next three stages we see here is one is formally established in devotional service, one is rendering devotional service. So that's bhakti and anartha pagamam. The bhratras or the obstacles from the heart are almost completely removed. And what happens when the anarthas are removed? Steadiness in one's devotional service comes. That's nishtha. So still we just saw that we have we are just at the eighth stage. We have six more to go. So what happens by continuously hearing and serving in devotional service? What happens is in verse 19, the devotee is completely free, or he's not affected by the modes of passion and ignorance. So he's situated firmly in mode of goodness. And when he's situated in goodness, he's also developed this higher taste for serving the Lord and his devotees. So he is on his way to Suddha Sattva, pure goodness, but he's not there yet. He's almost there on his way. So the next two stages of spiritual development are mentioned here in this verse, which is ruchi. That's we saw that higher taste is developed. And what happens when higher taste is developed? One is not attracted to sense objects. And the next stage is ashakti, or firm attachment. One still further develops. So attachment also is progressive. One is, you know, it's nishtha and all that, but now it's more formed. And that is ashakti. And firm attachment to devotees and Krishna. So that brings us to the next verse. So in the last verse we saw there is a firm attachment. So in the next verse, verse 20, we see that, like we saw in the verse before, that one is on the way to Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. So in this verse, one is established in Shuddha Sattva. So when one is established in pure goodness, he is enlivened. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport the difference between Brahmana and a Vaishnava. It's important for us to know also what there is a difference, because Prabhupada talks about it. So Brahmana is actually one who is in mode of goodness. So he's still affected. He's still within the modes. But a Vaishnava is beyond. He's transcendental to the modes. Vaishnava is in pure goodness. So the next four stages are mentioned. The last four stages are mentioned in this verse. So after firm attachment, we see that deep likening, or it's called rati, deep likening for the Lord, or deep attachment in love for the Lord is established here. So these are the phrases from the, or the words from the verse, evam prasanna manasa, that indicates rati. And then the next stage is, when one has developed that deep likening, the next stage is pure love of God, prema, develops. And when pure love of God develops, after that stage, it's one gets the audience with the Lord, one sees the Lord. That's darshanam. And then for last stages, it's Hare Madhuri Nabhava. It's direct experience of the Lord Hari's witness. So actually when I was hearing His Grace Bhurijan Prabhu's class, he said that we actually not in prema we can understand, but the last two stages, it's very hard to even understand. So it's just that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has mentioned those stages, but it's His mercy that He has mentioned for us to even know, but it's we cannot even perceive or think about what it would be like. So verse 21 then describes what is the effect of seeing the Lord. It says that the knot of false ego is completely destroyed, or it's completely cut. There are no more, there is no tinge of material desire in the heart. And one sees oneself in relation to Krishna. So one actually sees one's being an eternal servant of the Lord. And also one sees what is Krishna's position as the Supreme Master. So one that time one can understand one's position and what is Krishna's position. So that brings us, that ends this 14 stages of spiritual development. And then it brings us to the next set of verses 22 through 29, where we see the conclusion is given that Lord Hari, Lord Krishna, is the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that He should be worshipped and served. So verse 22 actually is a conclusion of the last theme, verses 16 through 21, and it also mentions the glories of devotional service. And in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that devotional service is the only facility or only way to re-establish our lost relationship or connection with the Lord. There is no other way we can re-establish our dormant relationship with the Lord. So in 20 through 29, this theme is there, but within that we have a sub-themes. So 23 to 25 specifically mentions about the worship of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. And verse 23 mentions that only Lord Vishnu should be rendered devotional service. Why is that? Because we see that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are actually associated with mode of passion and ignorance respectively. So, but Vishnu is transcendental to the three modes, and only worshipping Vishnu will give us ultimate benefit, which is liberation from the three modes. And also worship of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, we don't get, they cannot give liberation. Only Vishnu will be able to give, because they are still under the modes or affected by the modes. So verse 24 explains why Lord Vishnu should be worshipped. It's still like convinced, there's so many points that are given that to establish Lord Vishnu's position as the Supreme Lord. So here further explanation is given that why Lord Vishnu should be worshipped. The verse itself describes how mode of goodness is better than mode of passion and ignorance. And it explains by giving an analogy of how fire is better than wood and smoke and wood. Because smoke in the purport, Prabhupada, it says that smoke is like mode of passion and wood is in mode of ignorance. We cannot do much with smoke and wood, but with fire, we are able to directly use fire. So mode of goodness is better than mode of passion and ignorance. And then how one can come to the mode of goodness, that is also explained. Prabhupada says that only when one takes the shelter of a spiritual master and under his expert guidance renders devotional service, one can come to the mode of goodness. Prabhupada also mentioned that the spiritual master actually is, can bring anybody even from the mode of ignorance and passion. It's not a requirement, but the spiritual master has that ability to bring even somebody from mode of passion and ignorance to mode of goodness and then pure goodness. So verse 25 mentions that by following the footsteps of the Mahajans, one can become eligible for liberation. And who are the Mahajans? Mahajans are the authorized agents of religion. They know exactly what is the purpose of religion, and they have perfected the life by following the religious principles. So they know the purpose of religion, and the verse mentions that just by following these great authorities, one becomes eligible for liberation. So like we need examples to follow. So this is where, you know, we can use their examples, we can follow their footsteps, and also come to the level of liberation. And beyond liberation, of course, because they are, you know, pure devotees. Where so next set of verses, this is another sub-theme. Verses 26 and 27 describes the worship of Vishnu with versus worship of demigods. What is the difference? Prabhupada mentions in the purport that what is the difference between Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva. Vishnu Tattvas, he says, that they are transcendental, versus Jiva Tattva is still conditioned. And Vishnu Tattva therefore is eligible to give liberation, versus Jiva Tattva cannot give liberation. Then the verse, it also mentions how one should, as devotees who is worshipping Vishnu, how they should regard the demigods. So demigods are not to be disrespected, but we understand that the demigods are empowered agents of the Lord, and they are also serving the Lord in their capacity. So Prabhupada also mentions why people take up to the worship of demigods, because that's most common, is many people take up to this worship of demigods. So Prabhupada says that demigod worshippers are looking for some material benefit, and that also immediate benefit. So because of their material desires, so strong material desires, they are worshipping demigods. But we know that what demigods can offer is just temporary. It remains within the world. It cannot be beyond this world. So that keeps one again in the cycle of one's desire gets fulfilled, and then that's how one remains in this cycle of birth and death. Prabhupada therefore clearly mentions in the purport that the aim of life is to end the miseries of life and not to increase them. Because by worshipping demigods, what happens is we remain in this cycle. We desire, and our desires are fulfilled, we desire more, and that keeps on going, and it's just on the bodily platform, it's not on the soul platform. And for the living entity, as we saw before in the verses, what would satisfy the soul is just devotional service to the Lord. So that is not happening. So one remains in this pool of material existence. The last set of verses for this theme, 28 and 29, establishes Krishna or Vasudeva as the actual object of worship. And there are 8 things that are mentioned in the verse that, you know, those like purpose, what is the purpose of all those 8 things? Like purpose of the Vedas, sacrifices, yoga, fruitive activities, knowledge, austerity, religion, life. Life itself, what is the purpose of life is to worship Lord Krishna. That takes us to the last set of verses, verses 30 through 34, which describes how the Lord manifests the material world, and then as the three Vishnu features, and then also enters the material world and further carries on with the creation. What are his activities? So that answers the first, the next two set of questions, question 3 and 4. But question 4 is answered first, and then we'll see the answer to question 3. So the answer for the fourth question is spread out in these four verses, 30 through 33. And what is the fourth question?
Why does Krishna appear as son of Vasudeva?
That's the third.
What is the activities of the Lord when he...
In relation to creation.
In relation.
So what adventures does Lord perform in his incarnations, especially related to creation? So verse 30 and 31 describe the Lord's interaction with the material world. And there is a very important point which now Kishori Mataji made us understand very nicely. That the Lord creates in his three different Vishnu features, like Karnodakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu and Shirodakshay Vishnu. He creates the material the universes, and then he enters as Garbhadakshay Vishnu into the universe for further creation, where Lord Brahma is born, and then he also expands himself into the hearts of all the living entities as Shirodakshay Vishnu, to be with the living entity as a super soul, and also in all the atoms. So it's such a huge task, such an extraordinary activity. And on one side, if we see, if it's Vrindavan pastimes, he's just playing as a normal, ordinary boy with his friends. So how do we understand these two extremes? So that's why Bhurijan Prabhu says that whether Krishna is creating universes or acting in a way that resembles the activities of ordinary living beings, his activities are always transcendental. And this understanding is the foundational to understand Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. Otherwise, one will get bewildered. One will not understand his pastimes. So one should always remember, the important point is, one should always remember whether the Lord is creating universes or whether he is engaged in his pastimes, he still remains transcendental. So verse 32 then tells us how one can perceive Lord Shirodakshay Vishnu, or the super soul within the heart. Says that only by the process of hearing and chanting through the agency of the spiritual master, one can come to that point of realizing the super soul. But that is also, as we know, it's a very elevated, advanced stage where one can realize the presence of super soul. But that's possible when we follow the process under the guidance of the spiritual master. So then verse 33 further explains how the super soul or Shirodakshay Vishnu enters into the heart of all the living beings, and how he facilitates, Prabhupada explains in the purport, how he facilitates the desires to enjoy of the living entities, how he fulfills and facilitates, and then also he gives an opportunity for the soul to reform, if one at all is interested in getting purified and going back and developing the love for God. He also is so kind that he makes that arrangement also. So that's why the purpose of his creation is twofold. One is to facilitate our enjoyment. Okay, you want to enjoy, you go and enjoy. He arranges everything. And then if we want to get reformed, you know, then he sends devotees, he comes himself. So that leads us to the next question. Verse, why he appears, where the third question is answered, and the answer is partial, meaning it is also answered in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the third question is, for what purpose did the Lord appear? He appears or he manifests his transcendental pastimes to attract the conditioned souls to his eternal abode. As we have heard before, that just his pastimes are all also transcendental. So just by remembering his pastimes, glorifying his pastimes, so he actually gives us an opportunity to engage in that remembrance, glorifying, and that way he attracts us to his abode. So that's the end of the 34 verses summary. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.